We have not, yeah, I didn't have dinner, so.
Good evening, all of you sitting out there. I would like to call this special meeting of the Community Service District Board together to order. We'll dispense with the Pledge of Allegiance for the regular meeting. Roll call, please.
President Simon.
Here.
Vice President Grace.
Here.
Director Pease. Not here. Director Still.
Here.
Director Wiesen.
Here.
Thank you. Public comment. I'm going to dispense with public comment because there is no public in the building. And we'll move into from open session into closed session at this time. Carol, you want to shut off the...
The board is now adjourning into closed session regarding action item D1. Thank you.
Are we back to open session?
So he lost 100%. What does that mean?
Thank you, Mr. President, board members.
Hold on a second.
Board has reconvened into closed session regarding action item D1. All of the directors were present during the entirety of the closed session with the exception of Director Pease, who arrived at 6:06 and remained through the remainder of the closed session. At this point in time, there are no disclosable actions to report. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We're going to take a 5-minute recess before we start the regular meeting. Are we ready?
No, they don't have the reason.
Bill, are we ready?
We're ready.
Thank you. I'd like to call the meeting of the Community Service District Board to order, please. If you would join Kevin in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
President Simon.
Here.
Vice President Grace.
Here.
Director Pease.
Here.
Director Still.
Here.
Director Wiesen.
Here.
Thank you. This brings us to public comment. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the board's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time that item is called before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board will go through the chair. Is there any public comment? Going once? There is no public comment. Let's move to presentations, please. Any presentations, Rick? Other than our normal agency reports? Agency reports. Sheriff, come on up.
So for those that don't know me, I'm Deputy Scheffner, one of the resident deputies here, and I'm filling in for Lieutenant Johnson. A few things he asked me to address tonight. I guess there was an issue with the September statistics, so we're still having computer glitch with that, so we're still looking into that, and he's going to keep working on that for you guys. We've had a couple proactive vehicle stops resulting in warrant arrest and drug arrests. Only two residential burglaries this month. I think both were four centuries. We've had a few suspicious circumstances reported to us. The only issue we're seeing is some people are delaying and calling. They're kind of seeing, oh, we saw some kind of strange, and instead of going, let's call right now, well, we actually have a chance to catch them. Sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes an hour goes by. So just encourage people, don't second guess yourself. If it doesn't seem right, give us a call. Also a reminder, with holidays approaching, we're going to see vehicle thefts pick up as far as packages being stolen. So make sure nothing in plain view. Lock everything in your trunk. Also, we're going to expect to see, as far as UPS, packages being stolen. Any slow cars going around the neighborhood, possibly following UPS drivers or FedEx, please call us. So overall, this month, crime rate is down. And I guess there was a successful meeting on the 11th regarding the need for special events permits. And per Lieutenant Johnson, I guess everyone should be better informed now to hopefully prevent any further issues in regards to getting permits. Any questions?
Just a terminology question on by his DR issued in error. I don't, what does that mean?
So a DR is just a report that we generate.
Oh, a department report or something like that.
Yeah.
What's a 1664?
That should be a restraint order or a court order violation.
Okay, thank you. It just didn't have it. Just instead of having words there, it just actually had the report number.
We love numbers and codes, so we sound more important, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's great to hear you say the same, because we hear that from AJ a lot too. Is don't hesitate to report. Report immediately, and he has made the. I don't know if he cued you on that or what, but you almost made the exact same statement that he's made before. So I'm glad you guys are singing that mantra.
Yeah, matter of fact, today some guy stopped and said, 15 minutes ago, I saw, you know, this weird activity, and I wasn't sure I was going to call. And if I happen to see one of you guys, I'll just let you know. I'm just trying to remind him, no, call, because there may be a car in the area, and we could actually get down to the bottom of it. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's something. So.
Are you guys patrolling more on Byron Highway now, or is this is unusual? I don't usually see that many on here.
I don't want to say we're patrolling more. We always try to be on Byron Highway because it's kind of one of those arteries, but it's kind of just hit or miss, I guess.
Hit pretty good on this one.
Yeah.
Are there any public comment? Anything from the board? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, CHP is not here. The fire department, Hugh Henderson is here. Welcome.
Good evening, board. Hugh Henderson, I'm your fire chief for East County Costa. We have done a little bit of some reorganization, some reassignments with our battalion chiefs and stuff like that. So you're going to see me attending your meetings at least from now until probably the end of the fiscal year, July, to try to hit all the community meetings for the next 6 months or so, because we're going to start having a little more activity in the district and trying to keep you guys informed. As we kind of start working through the stuff with the district and everything, I want to commend this board. We've invited all the CSDs and MACs and the TACs in the community to try to assign somebody to attend our meetings, so in firsthand. And you've had Vice President Graves assigned for the last couple years, and he's attending our meetings. And I think it's good that your presence there at our board meetings, and I think it's good for our board to see the different groups in the communities there. Knowing that everybody's trying to see what's going on in the fire district. The other thing that may be a little bit of a change, maybe a little bit of a different report than you've seen Chief Burris give you in the past, but this is the operational report that we give to our board every month, which covers all the communities in the district. And so as I start attending these meetings, we're going to try to make this uniform across all the boards and there. So with that being said, the district was pretty busy in the month of October. We ran a total of 537 calls. The average response time district-wide was 7 minutes and 11 seconds. Compare that to September, there were only 506 calls. However, the response time was 6 minutes and 36 seconds as an average. The district in 2012, we ran 6,300 calls with an average response time of 6 minutes and 54 seconds. When you break down the Discovery Bay area coming out of the Bixler Station, there were a total of 72 calls in the month of October with an average response time of 9 minutes and 32 seconds. Compared to September, there were only 60 calls with an average response time of 8 minutes and 25 seconds. If you look at the very last page in your report there, you'll see it's broken down by stations, and you'll see CCE, and it'll have 50, all the 50 units or and 95 units are our stations. So you can actually break down the community Discovery Bay and Byron down a little further. So if you look in the common area here of Discovery Bay, you'll see that there were a total of 21 calls in that area, and the average response time in this area was 9 minutes and 53 seconds. In the Discovery Bay West and the Bixler and Highway 4 area, there were a total of 19 calls, and the average response time in that area was 5 minutes and 21 seconds. The Byron area was really busy in the month of October. There were a total of 32 calls there with an average response time in the Byron area of 12 minutes and 37 seconds. So when you look at the summary on the front page, it's taking the responses from those three areas and getting your response time there. The other thing in the Discovery Bay area in the month of October, we did have a major incident that was forwarded to your board as it was going on October 15th. We had a structure fire at 2010 Greenfield Court. Started as a vehicle fire in the garage. The garage was very well involved by the time our first units got on scene. It was handled with a single alarm. It was handled with all our resources, with the furthest engine coming from Station 93 in Oakley. We were on scene for 6 hours and 23 minutes. Unfortunately, there was about $1 million worth of loss in that call. First arriving unit was on scene in just about 6 minutes and 4 seconds. Another one of those things, that's one of those when I hear the Sheriff's Department talking about, you know, calling as soon as you see something. See that we see the same thing with fires. We see where people will see a small fire or they'll see a fire, they're going to check things, they're going to do some things, but somebody needs to call 911 and get the resources coming. The hard part about any of these far ends in the district is we're at the furthest east part of our district and all the help's coming from the west. And so, you know, that impacts in here in this call, for an example, you know, coming in just before 9 o'clock in the morning. I was just walking out of my office to leave for a meeting anyway. The call came in on the dispatch from there. From our office, we could see smoke towards the Discovery Bay area. So that fire was already burning quite well by the time we're getting dispatched on that. That adds that extra curve to us on that. Again, no injuries on that. Major property loss. You know, the good news is no one got hurt, either firefighters or civilians.
Was there any damage to the homes on either side?
Some minor scorching and
not
some
even
paint.
As bad as the one previously over on.
No, compared to the one on
Edgeview,
there was the exposure damage was
very contained.
Yeah, it's insignificant. I looked at both sides, and I was really amazed. None of the trees around were scorched. None of the two side houses were scorched.
My response time was about 8 minutes coming from downtown Brentwood. The fire had already run the whole attic of the whole house by the time I arrived. First thing I did was go to the back of the house, and there was flames already blowing out the back of the attic. So at that point, I mean, with the construction and everything, and those points, you're trying to protect as much equipment as that, you're starting to protect the neighbors' houses, and, you know, unfortunately, it's bad news.
He's a friend, a very good friend of a friend of mine, the guy that owned the house. He said he lost everything, including his wallet, and his keys were melted in the house. He said everything he owns is gone.
But he got out. That's
got
important.
Out, no injuries.
Yeah.
No injuries.
So again, you know, we are here at your district. If you have questions, or if your calls in between, you know, Rick and I try to talk at least once or twice a month. But if you have questions, get them to Rick, and we'll get them back out to you here as soon as possible. I know there were questions on the response time on this one. Rick emailed, and I think you had them within about an hour, huh?
Hugh, I have a question for you. Today, when I was coming across, I was coming in from Fairfield, and I was coming across the bypass, I saw smoke over, looked like it was from the east side of Brentwood. Was there a fire over there, or was it just a field? Do you know anything about
rough
that?
Time?
1:30?
We're into ag burning season. Ag season opened November 1st, so you're going to start seeing a lot more smoke in those areas.
Okay.
There's been some change in the ag burning. That's all being controlled by air quality control now. Mm-hmm. So we're not part of any of the permitting process on that. We get notified that somebody's burning and it's a burn day, and if it's not a burn day, we go out and put their fire out, and then they air quality control does the enforcement on them.
Gotcha. Okay. So there was no structure fire that you were?
No, not today.
Okay, good.
Monday was very busy. We had four.
I'm sorry?
Monday was very busy. We had four.
Nope. Just for general purposes, on response time, how does that record it? I mean, is that not recorded, but when does the clock start? Is that when someone picks up 911 and the dispatcher starts, or when they're actually
transferred? The report that was sent to Rick that I'm presuming went out to the full board, you'll see it broke down in several different pieces. From the time the call, the response time actually starts from the time 911's picked up. But it'll also break out from the time that they dispatch them, from the time that the engine is dispatched to the time they go en route. During daylight hours, the goal is to get out of the station within 60 seconds. And that means the crew's got to drop what they're doing, get dressed, and get on the road. Then you have your travel time. The travel time, for example, on that call was 5 minutes and 6 seconds. So they didn't lay ground grow between Bixler and getting there to get there. You know, unfortunately, when we go into there, the speed bumps kill us. Right. They do the purpose to slow people down. They're not good for fire responses. Right. And then you get your on-scene time from there.
And once when an engine rolls up to the scene, whatever that is, and they stop the truck and get out, that's
on scene.
Yeah. Okay.
It may be at a fire hydrant, right? Not even right in front of the house.
And the example of that call, 59 stopped at the fire hydrant and took their water in with them because they knew they had big fire from there. Yeah. And you only got 500 gallons on the tank. And I'll bet you we put 15 or 20,000 gallons on that fire by the time it was done.
Any public comment?
Jim? Back to the Greenfield one real quick. When you said it was 6 minutes and 12 seconds on scene, was that a fire engine or just a response unit?
That was the fire engine at the hydrant. The QRV, or the quick response medical unit, was just at the front of that.
Okay.
It was probably about 25 seconds ahead of the engine.
So then the next engine took about how long?
About 3 minutes longer, and that came from downtown Brentwood. And in between that second engine, you had a battalion chief show up and myself.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chief.
No problem. Have a nice evening.
Thanks for coming here. Appreciate it.
Okay, let's see. We have East Contra Costa Fire Protection District report. I think he just gave it. And Supervisor Peoples' office,
Karen Cornell.
Can you hear me?
Nope. Pull that microphone down. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
We can now.
Thank you, Board, for having me this evening and to give a quick update for the supervisor. First up is the Department of Conservation and Development. The building inspection department has moved. They're just on the street from where they were before, but they are now at 1120 2nd Street, Suite 101. And I have some flyers here that I'll leave in the back for your residents who come in. And I don't know if anyone's been over Vasco Road lately, but we have new vertical delineators that were just installed last month from Public Works, and they will continue to be out and monitor and replace as needed. Supervisor Pipo was just recently appointed as the vice chair to the Delta Protection Commission, and the Delta Protection Commission is a state agency charged with protecting and restoring the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. So that's exciting news, and it's going to be a busy year. As the sheriff noted earlier, Supervisor Pipo hosted a successful meeting, I would say, on Monday afternoon regarding the permitting for temporary events at your new community center, and thank you for letting us use your facility. And next up is the food drive, the 2013 Contra Costa Solano County food drive that we're trying to raise money for. It's a annual competition between the supervisors to who can raise the most money, and at the end of the year there's a little apple trophy award that the supervisor gets to keep. So Mary's trying to win this year, and so contributions can be sent to our office, and hopefully we'll win. And then last but not least, we're having a holiday open house on Monday, December 9th from 4 to 6 p.m., and we hope you all can join us.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Public comment? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Committee liaison reports. Transplant.
Wayne Steele from your Contra Costa County Planning Commission. I have both transplant and one update on our Contra Costa County Planning Commission. Normally, you'll see me showing up when there's something that's been actively looked at that's going to affect this area. We're doing a lot of things recently that had to do with recovering one of our cities that had separated from our group, and has since, after about a year of working on that with legal departments, and we've got everything back together. So not that we have neglected looking at other projects that need to be done. EBART's been continually updated. We get a lot of updates about WETA and some of the ferry system that we're trying to work with for the emergency services. But the one that came recently that I thought was extremely important that I come and talk about is we got an update from 511 Contra Costa School Program, which has to do with funds that are part of a federal grant for safe routes to school. And after the incident that we had at Excelsior, I engaged the person that had given this report and talked to her about Excelsior. And in the report, there had been some schools that had not taken the opportunity to maybe participate in some of the funds that were available here. Some of those funds that are available have to do with helmet programs, pedestrian and bike safety for high schools, elementary schools, International Walk to School Day, and a few other items. This one that we really need to look at is number 9, and it's Street Smarts 2. And this is an outreach program to help with infrastructure. And part of where I see the funds from the Street Smart being able to help us with Excelsior and maybe even, again, talking with Knightson about some sort of safe path to their school, so if the kids are walking or riding a bike, that there's a better protection for them. The funding is set aside for coordinating with school districts, local police departments, on improving improvement projects, which could include bike paths, which could include identifying access points. Instead of having a child have to take their bike through the same place that the car is going through, that fence easily could have been and should at some point be opened up at the north end of that road. There are funds then to be able to possibly qualify for a crosswalk if we can get that approved, with lights, the flashing lights, so that the kids can transfer from the right side of the road to the left side and then straight in the gate. So I'm going to continue to follow up on this and work with Supervisor PFO and the rest of Transplan and see what we can do with the superintendent about filing for and qualifying for those funds and see if we can get something taken care of there. Also, in going out there, I did note in taking some pictures on Byer that there's no identification that there's a school zone coming up, and those cars are going 35 miles an hour down there. These funds can also fund that, maybe some speed bumps, something to slow them down if the kids are taking an alternate route and not coming down J4, that they're coming down Byer. It's still very unsafe on that side. So I think that that's something that we'll continue to look at so that we can help prevent.
What's the time frame for moving some of these forward?
I have left messages for the superintendent. I need to get to her and have her discuss with the Street Smarts team what it takes to qualify and how quickly. I'm hoping that there can be some urgency. We already have the ability to open that fence up. that should happen immediately. The crosswalk thing, there's a lot of public works, highway approval to get that on there, but being that we've had a tragic incident there, I would hope that presses it forward. There's also currently a PG&E pole that's got a guy wire tied to it that's in the optical view of kind of the site path in exiting, and if anybody is looking to the right, that child would have been in a blind spot, and I think when that encroachment was made there, that should have been moved, and so I'm also pursuing with PG&E. I've left some messages trying to get to the right person to see if we could possibly move that. Now, when I grew up, it was wear something bright and right on the right, which meant that the child would have been on the other side, but at some point, he would have had to cross the road. And that's where, if we can get him a safe crosswalk and an entry away from the vehicles, we'll be much better off. And then from now on, there shouldn't be any encroachments that are commonly used between bikes and cars. That should just be eliminated, and it's not that tough.
Can you keep us updated as this goes
along?
I will.
Okay.
Any questions from the board? Question?
What about conversation with having 4 to 5 feet added on by a road on the width and getting that, you know, they're going, you say 35 miles an hour, 55 and 65 at all times, and there's no, the shoulder's pretty weak there. I know it's an old farm road, but that's the main access to the school now, so.
Yeah, that would actually, there, it would be more funds that we would be dealing with to work with the county.
We need to look at a widening plan for that.
Yes.
For that path. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
No, thank you for representing us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, that's it.
Marianne?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Bill?
No. Good.
Yeah, that's nice.
Public comment?
Yeah, I've got two. You say you left messages for Debbie and she hasn't returned them?
There was some conflict with her schedule when I left it. I did get a return call, but it was a message. So I just have to, I'll pursue that again tomorrow to see if even tomorrow maybe I can get with her, show her this. She's probably already seen it, but I think, you know, a lot of things have probably been going on her plate. And I've been able to isolate some time and just say, look, we got an easy fix on that fence, which should take less than a day to get the opening. You then have to be able to give them a path that's designated, but that's just some gravel that doesn't take that long to do. Again, across the road is where we're going to have the time constraints and the funds that we're going to have to do.
And then the other part of that is the funds are available as of today. It's just a matter of putting the paperwork in and getting it going.
Correct.
And how long does that usually take by the time you get the clock going?
It's each project is different because we've got to deal with Byron Bethany, you know, the Public Works Department. But again, I think I'll find out if there's a way of speeding it up. And
knowing what you know, 3 months, a year?
Be less than that. I think 3 months would probably be. But I think what's going to kill us is not the funding as much. We can probably get the funding approval. It's the process of developing the plan, getting all the approvals, expediting those through. But, you know, this is Mary's area, and I'm sure that she can tap on some shoulders and remind them of the nature of that school being on that road.
Right.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So if I can move on to the Planning Commission. And again, we see a lot of things in the Planning Commission. A lot of them aren't out here. I would have to say this year we have probably had more cancellations to meetings than we've had meetings. It seems that they're going to start ramping up from what I hear. We will be seeing on the 19th a submittal for some changes at the Phillips plant out in out near Crockett. And I did go tour that, and it's really not an expansion. It's just some change in the way that they're handling propane and butane out there, and some tracking and possibly some extra rail cars that will have to be moved through there. The plant is going through some continued upgrades, which I was glad to see. They did show us all the warning sensors that are tied into our phone system. So I was kind of happy with that. What I'm bringing you tonight, though, is the Pantages project that you guys had heard about before off of Point of Timber. I actually reside in Lakeshore, so it's right next to our property. and it does come in common, so there are some things that we're going to be dealing with with the developer to see if we can work on eliminating some of the levee situation that we have in the common area. But this is a 292 single-family residential lots. 131 of them are not on the water. Those are R1 6000, and they're designed really tight. The ones that are on the water are to be purchased and then custom home design, a gated community at the end of Point of Timber, unmanned gate, meaning we'll just be coding in and out of there. Along with that is the they're providing a marine patrol station that's going to be great for taking care of the issues that we have, including a helipad there. There's also a walkway around the marshland that's going to be built in. There will be daytime from sunup to sundown public access allowed by pedestrians and bikes to be able to traffic around that area that they are putting the bike path on. It's a very good project. There was one condition that we eliminated. It was condition 75A, and anytime there's an A letter, it means that it's been added kind of at the last minute. And it had to do with leaving the gates open, vehicular access to public open space. This project had always been brought to me as being a gated community, no different than Lakes and Lakeshore and the Country Club. And then all of a sudden, maybe days before, we were going to be meeting, I got a look at this one condition, and then I did get some calls from concerned citizens, and then myself being concerned because I live in a gated community, is what happened? Why is it that they were going to leave the gates open? This condition was expecting the gates to be left open from sunrise to sunset, which would have meant that that whole community would have been a public a parking nightmare, because people would have gone in and dead-ended on the streets and parked to get into the park area or the walk area. We have plenty of parking up and down Point of Timber. If people want to park there and take their dogs in or ride their bike there, they have no problem with that. But the commissioners felt, after hearing discussion from the applicant as well as other homeowners that are in the area that are planning on purchasing inside or expect to purchase in there, they were expecting a gated community. So the commissioners did shoot that down and had that stipulation or that condition removed so that it will remain a gated community. Obviously the access for fire and the sheriff's department are always in the coded situation, but the side there are pedestrian gates on both sides, so there'll be no problem with those gates being electronically opened or unlocked so that people can go through them. There is one other access, and it's emergency access only, that's coming off of Wild out of the Ravenswood project. That'll be for emergency access in and out if something were to happen that they have to bail out there. I don't think that there is a pedestrian gate there. I'm not sure when I looked at it.
By normally locked gate? Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Okay.
Nope.
Hey. Thank you.
Public?
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Alrighty, let's go to, we have no code enforcement. Rick, there was no code enforcement, or was there?
It's tomorrow. It's been rescheduled for tomorrow.
All right, then we'll meet you all back here tomorrow night, and we'll discuss it. special districts, that's quarterly. Okay, consent calendar. If there's any questions, can I get a motion otherwise?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, new business. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Item before you tonight was originally before you on October the 2nd, and if you recall, we pulled the item to do some additional research. It has to do with the purchase of a video surveillance system for the Discovery Bay Community Center site. As you know, we've been broken into three times during the month of August. We've been looking at we have a security system in the building. It's not video security, but we do have an alarm system in the building. And I know that Virgil and I have both been called out in the middle of the night to turn that off in the past. And so this before you this evening is a video system for the outside of the building. It would provide cameras on the grounds, the pool area, and we've evaluated a number of different systems. And Greg Harris, who's also working with us on the systems at the at the wastewater treatment plants, is kind of piggybacking this one on that project. So I'm going to ask Greg to come up to go ahead and give you an update. And he's the one that's actually done pretty much most of the research on the two preferred types of cameras.
Good evening, Gregory Harris, Herbert Engineering. So by coincidence, you know, we've been looking into improving the camera system at Plant 1 and Plant 2, wastewater plants. And then,
Ian Anderson, man.
What's different? You know, we have cameras at the wastewater treatment plants. We've talked about putting cameras at the community center. We were doing research and getting ready to get quotes for the treatment plants, and we said, okay, well, let's get some work on the community center and see what we can do there. The big difference is, I don't know if you know, the community center was broken in August, as just discussed. The wastewater treatment plants were also broken into this year, twice. Okay, and we actually have video of people hauling the stuff out. So they stole construction equipment, they stole an entire trailer full of construction stuff. They parked outside of treatment plant number one, had one person jump the fence and they just sat there. And then the guy ran all the way back, like 1,500 feet back to the back of the plant. Wait, you know, 20 minutes go by, then he calls the guy on his cell phone. We have video of all this. And they go into the gate, they break the gate, they go grab the trailer, and they haul out. You know, they were there for 30 minutes or more, standing there staging this. We have it all on video. No arrests, no nothing. The stuff is just gone. Nothing but an insurance report, you know, is all that we're able to get out of that. And the primary issue is we've come to discover just videotaping somebody steal your stuff doesn't get your stuff back, or doesn't stop them either. And it doesn't even lead to arrest. We've been broken into probably at least a half a dozen times, if not more, at the treatment plants. Never an arrest, never get stuff back, none. But the good news is, or, you know, as we looked at this, we said, okay, so why have a camera system? What more is it gonna do for us? You know, just having a recording of someone stealing your stuff doesn't do anything, right? So we said, if you're going to put a camera system in the treatment plants, we're going to enhance that, and then conversely put it in at the community center, it needs to be more than just what we have now. It needs to be different. And in that particular case, we said, and we had, I had come across technology that's now available in cameras that's called smart alerting or smart analytics to the camera. And what that allows us to do is set up cameras that watch for certain things, and then the camera actually alarms out. Okay, and so when we said, let's look at cameras for the community center, we said, look, it's got to do something that's useful to us while there's there. If there's kids there, we'd like to be alerted that there's kids there, and we can act. We can either call the sheriff, or we can drive over, or we can set off a light, or we could do something to discourage them from going there, you know, and not just come in the next morning and find out they spray painted whatever or did whatever, you know. So there, we did a lot of research, and I was familiar with one system called the VideoIQ system. We also investigated other systems, and there's basically two systems that have what we call the smart analytics built into them. The system I have a video here for you to see is the Bosch system, okay? And they work similar, they do similar things, but this video just kind of shows you kind of some of the things that you can now do with a camera system. So that's what the first video is. Okay, so what you see here, what I like about this is a typical fence line, okay? So on the right side of the screen, there are actually boxes that you can check. So they call it, you see the words fence movement, okay? You see crossing the fence. In this particular case, red means an alarm went off, and you see the yellow box lights. In this case, someone put an object down and left it. Well, in this particular case, the camera's looking for someone to put an object down and leave it. Okay, and so that's alerted. And then we see someone removed an object from the area. So these are all things that you can now select with cameras to give you an alert when something's going on. So you can actually paint this fence line that you see here, and you see the person here is highlighted in yellow. Any object that comes in gets highlighted. Now you can highlight that by size, you can highlight it by this person. You can see that they can put a band on the fence. If something crosses the fence, alarm goes off. So everything you see flash red is an alarm that is available to you if you were to select it. So the idea being that there's modern cameras now that have this built-in analytics. There's two manufacturers that have kind of similar products, VideoIQ and Bosch. And Bosch is slightly less expensive and seemed to be a little bit more robust for what we're looking for. And this is the kind of thing you can do. It is available now. Now, there's other videos, cars driving by. You can check the speed of cars. There's videos of loitering at an ATM. So how long does someone stay there? So that's a common problem. Does someone hang out there? Does the same person hang out there for 10 or 15 minutes? An alarm goes off, kind of thing. You can set it up to go off at different times of the day. Like, okay, I don't care during business hours, but after business hours, if someone walks past, and you see the red area here, that's defined as an area. If somebody goes into that area, that's an object of a certain size that stays for a certain length of time, you can set off an alarm.
So, Greg?
Yeah.
So that would mean that we could set that up to where if in the time of the year where the pool's closed, or the time of night when the pool's closed, they could go down and access the tennis courts at 7 o'clock at night, but if they went over into the grass area over towards the pool, we could isolate that area and that would be alarmed.
Yeah, absolutely. You can draw, so there's a little mini fence, there's a little short fence around the pool. You can draw a picture over that, and if anything goes into that, you get alarmed.
Because that's off base when right. We're not there.
Yeah. Right.
Tennis courts, if we want them to access, we really don't want them to be over in the other part of the park at mm-hmm. night. Unless they've paid to be there.
That's correct. Okay. And so
that's kind of cool. So it kind of puts up a
so this is called smart fence, analytics. This is technology's I'll say a couple of years old. It's new technology, but it's not brand new. It's been out and done enough. It's not perfect, but it is a step up from where we're at now. For instance, they have common things like to blind out leaves, motion, and stuff like that. This kind of thing. So, but can you fake it out? Will you get some false alarms? Yeah. But the user interface tools look really quite easy to use. It's set upable that once you set it up, you can change and tweak it, change object size, do things.
What about remote monitoring?
So remote monitoring is available with most modern systems, such as the VideoIQ or the Bosch system. You can get it on your iPhone, your iApp, so you can get an alarm. We can send a text message to whoever volunteers. They get that text message, they can hit a button on their iPhone, their iPad, or anything, and immediately see the cameras, instantaneously, see all the cameras at the facility.
See, this is exactly what the sheriff was talking about when he got here today. That is being able to make the call in time to be able to have some effect on the crime as opposed to just clean up.
Right. Now, what we still need to think through is we now have more information than we used to. We know somebody's there. We know they're there when we don't want them to be there because we can set time periods for when we want. And we know they're doing something we didn't want because we set it up what we don't want them to do. Now, our question might be, what is our response? And that's kind of where we're heading next. But we need to start with, let's get the camera system in place. For instance, we could put a speaker here. And you can go from your smartphone. You could talk to them while there. So you could get a call. Some kids are playing
Repent.
Around the pool.
Turn from your sins. This
talk
is God.
To them and say, guys, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Sheriff's on the way. Or if you don't feel comfortable talking to him, you could set off a light.
Yeah.
Or you could just call the sheriff. There are some communities.
Mm-hmm. Tommy, this is your mother. Get out of there.
The alerts and the video is made accessible to the sheriff's department. So, smaller communities, it just calls the sheriff. It doesn't even call anybody, it just calls the sheriff. He looks, okay. Obviously, this is a popular tool. It's used by law enforcement. It's used by a lot of government agencies now. In this particular case, Bosch is used by the Veterans Administration. It's used by several police departments. VideoIQ is used by several police departments, by Caltrans and some others. Caltrans has a problem. They have remote pump stations way out there. People hit them for wire, so they're stealing the wire. So they need to know, when is a person here? And you can't assign someone to just sit here and watch your video for months on the odd chance that someone's going to show up. They aren't perfect. You can get some false alarms, but it's a whole step up from where we're at now. The next step will be, playing around with it and finding out what's the kind of response we want. You know, we want a light going off. Do you want to be able to talk to them? You know, do you want to call the sheriff?
But the false alarms are monitored, can be monitored by staff, you know, maybe, before it gets ever to the point where we're calling the sheriff for a false alarm.
Sure. I mean, the thing about it is you can get a text, you can pull up, you can look. Is there anyone wandering around or not? So as you can see, there's a lot of unique technology under smart analytics. So this is half of the improvement that we see with this camera system. So the other one is, I want to do the first one on the bottom.
We're going to have like a live cam. We can
the first one be all of us.
Do any of these shots show this at night?
That's what we're showing right now.
Okay.
First one on good question, list. Mark.
Right here.
Yours. Yeah, first one on the bottom. Okay, so now what is very unique now is Bosch has a camera called a Starlight camera. And what you're looking at is a telescope facility in the Sierra Nevada mountains that is remoted in from universities around the world. And if you know that with a telescope of this quality, there can't be any ambient light. They don't want any ambient light around so they can view the stars. You're seeing a time-lapse photography of this, okay? And what you can't see in the bottom right-hand corner, I don't know why you don't see it, is the time. Now, right now, you don't know it, but it is 11 o'clock at night.
What?
This is 11 o'clock at night in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
That's
no
how big the aperture is on that thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. This is 11 o'clock at night. The shadows you're seeing is the moon creating these shadows. It's now coming
amazing.
In, I'm sorry, 2200 hours is 10 o'clock. Yeah,
wow.
10 o'clock at night. So it's now 10 o'clock at night. You're seeing the shadows coming across from the moon line.
Wow.
Okay, this is called their latest camera. It's their Starlight camera, all right? And obviously it's a very expensive facility. They want to know if someone's messing with their camera, if there's any issues. The little red LED lights that you see there at the bottom are like the LED lights on the front of your VCR. They're that big, you know. So that isn't a very big light, as you can see. And the adaption of this camera is, even at very low light, it still shows color. Okay, it is now coming on 1 o'clock in the morning. It finally switched over. The moon's gone down, and it switched over to true starlight.
Wow.
Okay, and then outside your screen, there's actually, you can see the stars rotating. There they are. See the stars rotating above?
Yeah.
Okay. This is pitch black. If you stand there,
you'd
5 feet away, you cannot see the person. Wow. This is how dark this is. Okay.
It's impressive.
So this is the starlight. Now, the advantage of the Bosch camera, what we felt over the Video IQ camera, is they have the starlight capability now, where the Video IQ still needed a light on. They still need a light on to see what's going on. Now remember, we're not trying to see people's faces. We're not trying to, you know, do that. We're trying to know if somebody's there. So first off, we've got to see the object. But for instance, in this picture, we could define that fence as an area of interest. If anything comes over that fence, any time, day or night, we can get an alarm. We can decide what we want to do with that alarm, if we want to turn a light on, if we want to call the sheriff, or we want to talk to them, or whatever, this kind of thing. So that, now we're coming across at 6 o'clock in the morning. Let's see, yeah. So just now, 6 o'clock in the morning, you see the color comes back into the picture. So that was 24 hours right through the middle of the night with the same camera.
Yeah, look at how sharper the picture gets during the night,
yeah.
Day, though. Look at how more distinct it is. Yeah.
So when you think about what we're trying to accomplish with the camera, which is we want to be alerted if there are people around. We don't necessarily need to know who they are, because we're supposed to respond to them. You know, we're supposed to act and respond and stop it while they're there. All right, so anyway, we got prices from Video IQ. We got prices from Bosch. And Bosch is, Video IQ was represented by QPCS, and Bosch is represented by West Coast Security Incorporated. The Bosch camera system was a little bit less expensive. There are options for sound systems of different qualities that we still need to investigate, and we still need to answer that question. Well, what do we do when the alarm goes off? Okay, so now I know there's somebody there. Do I call somebody? Do I text mail somebody in the district? You know, how do we want to do it? We'll have to play around with that, and we need to test out some sound systems if we want the ability to talk to them before we make a commitment, I think, on the sound, because they can be anywhere from $500 to thousands of dollars, and we don't know really the best way to go on that.
But you may want two-way communication at the gate or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it, is the cameras already have the sound output in there. It's just a matter of hooking it up to whatever sound system we come up with. You know, obviously they make security industrial sound systems are very expensive. I'm not sure if we need that, but, you know, that's basically the item here in front of you. Now, our plan is just, you know, is we are out getting quotes right now for wastewater treatment plant 1 and 2 to add to the video we have there. Because we have video there now. It happens to be Bosch. We have video there now. But it doesn't have any of these kind of capabilities. Can't alert ahead of time. That the cameras are very low resolution compared to these cameras. As you can see, the resolution is quite good with these cameras. You know, so they're lower resolution, but we're not going to throw them away. We're going to keep those and add to them. So we're getting quotes on that now. But these are the quotes for the community center. It was kind of something that we could throw in. This is, I was researching the other ones anyway. And I'm here to answer any questions.
On the on this package, it said the cameras have the capability to, they're like their own mini computer, I'm hearing. So I'm assuming we have to have a software package of some sort.
Actually, with the camera, no. If we want, in this particular case, for the community center, there's a free software package that goes on your iPhone, your app, so you can view it on your app. But all you do, all the supporting, it's like a web page. All the information you need, you just literally type in the IP address of the camera, and you can go there and do all that stuff. There isn't any additional software, in other words.
Okay, so what if, well, if I've read the staff report correctly, we're just going to get one of these Starlight cameras and two other ones?
Liability?
No, they're all three going to be the same camera.
All three the same?
Yeah.
So how do the three connect together? In other words, if one of those cameras goes off and alerts, and another camera goes off and alerts, how are we getting?
It's just like having three different people call you. You know, I mean, at the moment, let's put it this way. For the community center, we intentionally went in saying, let's not blow the cost of this up really high.
Right, correct.
What can we do that's straightforward and simple and solves what we need? Okay, so right now it's basically three completely independent cameras. They don't know about the other camera. Mm. And if one of them alarms, and then the person walks into the second camera, that one's going to call you too. You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, no problem with
that. And then they have a memory card right on the camera that will record for about 7 days. So if there is a liability incident, let's say someone got hurt on the property, that's a liability issue for the district. You would have a recording of that, you know, at least in the areas that the camera could see. You'd have a recording of that for up to 7 days. So you guys would know that's enough time to go and download the video. You can take the video straight off the internet. It comes on a SIM card. You can pop out the SIM card. You know, you can do pretty much anything you want. So we've made some trade-offs because this camera, you know, you can do more. Like if we wanted more video storage, but then you got to buy a server and you're going to pay another couple grand for that, you know, and that kind of thing. And our position was at the moment, our issue is we're not being alerted when somebody's there.
Right.
You know, and yes, more storage and more stuff is cooler, but at the moment, if we can record for 7 days and be alerted that somebody's there, that's what we wanted to accomplish with the camera system. Because, like you said, there is an alarm system on the building. Actually, it didn't go off when we broke through last time, but there is supposed to be an alarm system on the building. This is about trying to alert us ahead of time and investigate this technology and get started with it. And then we'll be asking the questions about, I mean, after Virgil's, whoever's getting the phone call, someone's getting a phone call.
Well, there was an assumption.
Whoever's getting the phone call, you know, after they get used to it and see how we want to do it, then we can decide, you know, do we want lights to go off? Do we want other stuff to happen? You know,
right, that capability to turn a light on from your...
Right off the camera. You can do it on your phone, but right. The camera will do it. There's dry contacts.
Oh, you could set it up. The camera will turn it on automatically and alert you also.
Yeah, in fact, they have a situation where they put a speaker on it and they're pre-recorded messages, and you can do stuff like someone jumps over the fence. You record message one that says, hey, you're over the fence, stop it, right? If they loiter and they stay there, you can record message two. It says, we know you're still here. We're calling the sheriff.
So that capability is already in these
cameras.
Camera.
It's all there.
So then it's just, and I understand why, you know, you're not recommending at this time getting that extra speaker system.
Yeah, exactly. Now, with the treatment plants, for instance, we already have 6 cameras. We're adding more cameras. We need a server for it because we have too many old cameras we're trying to record data from. They have to have a server. You know, we're mixing and smash. But we wanted to start simple and a reasonable cost and get the best we can for a reasonable cost at the community center, because there is not in the budget, all right? So we can't be, you know, I mean, granted, we could spend a lot more money there, but we thought this got us the minimum goal, which was smarter learning, nighttime vision, you know, and that's where we're starting, you know, over there.
Does the Western Security, or I think that's the name,
West Coast,
they're going to come out and help implement it if we...
Yeah, if you read the proposal from them. So basically, here's the deal. To keep it inexpensive, all they're doing is providing what's called a power over Ethernet router. And we provide the internet connection, and we run the Ethernet cables inside the building from the cameras. They mount the cameras, okay, and then they help install the little apps on our cell phones and on our iPads, whoever wants it, okay. And then they train us, and they help set it up. And one nice feature of the cameras is it's one of the few cameras that auto-focuses on any lens that you pick. So traditionally, and this is out this year, so this camera has a lot of nice features that most cameras don't. But like normally when you put up a security camera, you have to pick what focal length, what area you're starting with, and then they have to very carefully adjust it by hand. And it takes about an hour, you know, and it takes a lot of feedback to do that. But the new cameras now, you can pick any focal length you want, any lens you want, and then it automatically autofocuses it for you. So it's a very fast setup now. So, but yeah, so basically they mount the camera, hook up the wires, we bring the wires over there, but they land the wires, and then they hook up the software and they set up the defaults that we want. So we say, this is the area we want painted. Anyone comes in here for more than 2 minutes, give us a call. They set up the text messaging, you know, whoever else we want to send stuff to, they send all that, and they train us on how to do that so that we can do it in the future. So that's basically what's in the back.
How much ground does one camera cover?
One camera is right around 100 degrees. You know, so we can't see all the property with three cameras. The thought was you'd have one at the parking lot, one at the tennis courts, and one at the pool area. You know, and that's basically three sides of the building. You know, and, you know, for instance, after hours, someone's in the parking lot after hours. If they're there for half an hour, or, you know, whatever, you can set up an alarm on that. If they come out of the parking lot onto the sidewalk, you can alarm immediately. You know what I'm saying? So that you can create these little bands where different things happen, depending on what you're monitoring.
You mentioned it's a 100 degree, but what's the reach?
Oh, how far out?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the distance on it is actually, I have some other videos, distance on it is a long ways in daylight. At night, it's pretty good, but I have some videos where they put it on a farm, and it's black, because they show the before, and you can't, I couldn't see a guy standing right there, that's how black it is. With the camera, you can see him and stuff, but I don't know at night how far your vision is going to go. Now, if you add one light, it goes a long way, so that's the nice thing, it doesn't blush out with the light, and you do have some lights out there, so... but easily, you'd see all the way to the street and across the street, you know, hands down, from the building.
So from, you know, when you're looking at the pool, you're going to see all
of... Oh, you'll see the whole pool easily. Okay. You know, I mean, right. I don't know if you'll see all the way. I don't know if you'd see our tanks over here. Because right. You can see, technically, if you're at the pool and you look this way, you can see the back of the tank. During the day, you would, but I don't know at night if you'd see the... You know, I mean, I don't know how far exactly it would go at night.
You don't really need
to. Don't need that.
Is there any kind of a failsafe for this to let you know if it loses an internet connection or if something is wrong with it?
There are things that you can do. We didn't pick one up this time because we considered we want to come in cheap. You know, like if you do the server, you can get a UPS for it, and you can get failure alarms, and we can add those things. But at the moment, not with this system. We said.
So how would we know if the internet's down?
You don't. With what we're proposing here, you don't. Okay, because remember, going over the internet is how we get the message to start with, right? So if the internet's down, we can, it's still recording, you know what I mean, the video is still recording, but the alert message doesn't go out, because we're, like I said, it's cheap, it's over the internet, you know.
The recording means nothing.
We could hook up a cellular system backup, you know, there, because there are contacts and things that we can do to alert us differently than the internet. At the moment, to keep the cost down, we've said, let's just get the cameras and assume 99% of the time the internet's going to be up, you know, because you have to line up. The internet has to go down at the same time someone's screwing around on site, right? So those are...
I mean, it could be down for, if there's a defect, it could be down for days and we don't know it. That's what my question is. Who's
The plan is, if you recall, we're going to be opening the building in January, so we would have somebody there during the day, during the week, and they would be on, there would be internet access just for their daily work functions. So if it went down, it would be known, at least from an overnight standpoint, to the next morning.
I guess if it went down to the camera, not necessarily if the internet went down, but if the connection to the camera, something happened to it, how would we know? My point is it would sit for days, and if somebody broke in, we'd have to...
What I would do is, if there's a computer there, you could just set up a display to show the cameras all the time. So anyone there can look and see all three cameras are working. That's a real question, right?
Screens or not, right?
What's that?
You can just have a bank of screens.
You can have a bank of screens, or you can put the monitor can show all the cameras on one monitor.
That's kind of thing.
Okay. So it assumes you have a camera. Either someone has to remote dial in. I mean, someone can just look on their phone and 1, 2, 3 and check. Or the convenient thing is this computer there and there's a person there. They just display the cameras all the time, and you can see what's going on.
I think the big thing for us is the monitoring, but probably more than that. As you know, other than this guy that took a half hour, they're usually in and out in a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And I think if getting it monitored and getting somebody who get it immediately, who can either speak to this person, tell them, hey, get off the property, or can dial the sheriff, it can't be a matter of, wow, we missed a guy by 5 minutes, or by the time it got to him and they called the sheriff, the people were gone.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big issue, is who's going to monitor it.
Right, and that's why, you know, we're on the same issue at the treatment plants, though it may end up going through Veolia since they have a person 24 hours on call at the treatment plant already for SCADA alarms. You know, it may be that we route that through them for that function at the treatment plants, but the community center, you know, it's going to have to be, you know, let's try it and see what's going to happen. And obviously, if someone's sleeping and they don't get their text message, and then this no different than just recording it, right?
Yeah.
That's why there's some question about, do you want an automated response? Do you want a light to go off? Do you want a pre-recorded message to go off? You know, I mean, it is kind of effective that the message changes based upon their actions. So if they start, they cross onto the sidewalk, say, hey, the facility's closed, you need to leave. They keep coming up to the building, and you define a new area, you change the message. You know, and suddenly they're like, well, wait a minute. It's interactive. Suddenly their action is responding a different response back, you know, kind of thing. A light goes off and says, hey, the sheriff's on the way.
Taser comes.
You know, so you can pre-record a message, you know. So we have to decide how best to use the fact that we've been alerted. You know, so now we've been alerted, now what? There are different lights. There's different speaker systems. There's different things we can do. We're not sure about that yet, but we know we have to start somewhere. So this is kind of like, let's start here and then see what kind of works, maybe test drive some stuff, because we can maybe get a light and try it, or we can get a speaker. I'm nervous about the speaker because you don't know how good it is until you hear it, right? So, you know, we can maybe test one and bring it directly off the camera and try it out and then say, oh yeah, this is going to be nice, you know, kind of thing.
When we're getting bids on this system, I know that when you brought that to us last time, a couple months ago, it was $8,000 for the brain, and we were going to try out all these cameras, whatever. About 3 or 4 days later, I was at a function with John and Ed Byron. I know that's what he does for a living. Because he asked me, he goes, what have you guys ever done about your security issues? And I'm not sure what the company name is that he works for, but he's local. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I gave a proposal to the town to do the entire project.
Oh, yeah, that was Ames, right?
I'm not sure it was $10,000.
Yeah, so, you know, what we did now, by the way, we also contacted Ames.net and Dynalab. Okay, Ames is and both those have residents in town. Okay, they are what's, I'll say more common. Well, first off, Ames.net is a networking company that also sold cameras, but they're more about networking than cameras and security. And they're like, we don't know anything about this technology, so we'll buy a camera and hook it up, but we don't know how it works. So they were kind of out. Okay, they gave us a price, but they were kind of out. Dynalect is like your home alarm system, kind of like the alarm that they have there now, where it's like someone breaks a window, or there's a latch on a door, you know, that kind of system. But they did not have anything. Their system of cameras is kind of like what you have now, which is just a viewing camera. It's not any of this alarming technology and stuff like that. So we went with people that have public agency experience. So Video IQ through QCPS, public agencies, police departments, public Caltrans, stuff like that, and West Coast, veterans, public agencies, police departments. And as you can see, there's a lot more functionality to the cameras and the equipment. So basically, we tracked down the people that sold those systems and had the experience with them, and that's with those two companies.
Okay. Yeah, I have no idea what he does. I know he approached me and said he was in that business.
Yeah, but we did get quotes from Dynalect and Ames, and they're both here locally, and they just didn't make anything that does this. I mean, they didn't provide anything that does this.
Chris, any questions?
Yeah, I like the two-way communication option. I like the trigger of putting up some sort of a flashing light and a siren going off or something over at the plant. And so those triggers and the next step will be important. But I think this is excellent technology.
Yeah.
Marianne?
I have no questions.
Bill?
Looks good.
No, you answered mine.
Kevin? Thank you. We're coming out to you now.
My question is with the alerts. I have an alert on my phone that said my camera went offline.
This is what?
My camera went offline. And this is my camera in my house. So I'm kind of wondering if the software has alerts that if, and it tells me exactly which camera is offline.
I didn't ask that specific thing, so I can't say for sure.
Because
this
is
my
just
feeling
a simple
is,
ADT
yeah,
system.
My feeling is that it probably does, because they seem to have like every feature. There's just like all these features that you can do. But I can't answer for sure to know for sure which way it is.
That would
however,
seem an awful simple function to have be part
yeah,
of it. I would think that
somehow we can create that issue, you know, that alarm.
And the second question is that if I go and cut the internet connection to that area, then we have, if we don't have cellular backup, how is a alarm system?
Yeah, you know, well, it's no different than the alarm system that we have. If you cut the phone line, our alarm system doesn't work.
But if you reverse yeah. that, which is the way mine is set up at home, I have a cellular primary with the phone line backup and the internet. So everything functions across the cellular if there's an activation, especially if your internet's not available. All the alerts go out through the internet. If it's cut off, it goes out through the cellular data. And within 1 minute, I'm aware that I've got a burglar alarm and the alert is going off.
Yeah.
Can we look into this?
Well, no, the answer is yes, we can put it in. It's just a matter of cost. So our goal, we recognize this wasn't budgeted. Okay, so our goal was let's at least get in the game with the infrastructure that we have, okay, because like when you buy your phone, you buy a cellular account with your phone, right? So you're already paying that monthly fee for that cellular access, right? So if we go with a cellular system, no problem, we can hook that up. There's contacts that we can send out, we can just like this, but then we have to buy a cellular account for the facility. We got to pay a monthly fee, you know. So the real thing was we don't have every answer right here. We know that this is a very good step in the right direction that lets us into other things, and that other things cost more money. So there's no problem. We can do cellular right now. I mean, you know, that's not a complex thing. Other than we have to get the account, we have to get the equipment for it. You know, and you're going to talk, you know, x amount of dollars more for that. I don't have the exact cost of that, but
I mean,
you know,
if somebody wants to steal it, they want to cut the wire. Just you know, that's pretty aggressive.
I doubt anyone really is going to find that wire. Now it might be down. You know, the internet can be down, but it's got to be down at the same time somebody's there. I mean, we're trying to look at a little probability and what's reasonable. I mean, it isn't perfect, but what you have now is nothing. So that's kind of how we see it.
And we can, those things can be added without...
don't have to reinvent them.
Yeah, you don't have to, I mean, they can be added as a feature at some
yes.
point down the road without having to redo
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't have to redo anything to add the cellular, to add the siren, or to add a speaker.
Right.
All that is built in already. Those outputs are already in the camera. It's just a matter of, do you want to take advantage of those features? Do you want to pay the cost
so
for
that? So give us a breakdown with all, as it goes. With
yeah,
all
you know, and it could be like you say, okay, this year we put the camera in, next year we put a speaker on it, you know, or next year we make it cellular. I mean, you know, we are trying to work within, we recognize that there isn't a budget set for this.
I would think a speaker would be fairly cheap, though, I would think.
Yeah, the real thing is one of the test ones, because we weren't sure. Because we got anywhere from $500 to like $4,000 for speakers. And I'm like, holy crap, you know, it's like this. So we wanted to be able to test one, you know, at least hear it and see if this is reasonable.
Yeah, let's see how it works and see how it functions for us. It may function well without adding anything to it. And if it doesn't cost anything to add it later, you know, if it's not
you can get a cheap siren and just hook a straight siren. There's an output contact on the camera. When it alarms, you can kick a siren, bam, right there. You know, if you just want a siren, that's a couple $100, right? You know, so it's just a matter of we got to play with it.
I believe I'll be the person for that.
You know, another feature that actually Gregory and I did go and look at the Bosch camera, but another feature that was on there, say you record it for the last few days and maybe some incident happened 2 days ago and now you're just finding out about it, and somebody could say the person was in a yellow truck or a yellow jacket. You can define yellow. Anything yellow coming across that screen it stops at that. Just search the whole thing, because today, an incident happens, I've got to search every single minute until I see something happen. Oh, bingo.
And if you fast forward, you miss it. Yeah.
Pardon me?
If you fast forward, you miss it.
Yeah, you can't.
Right.
All right.
Sounds pretty advanced.
Any other questions? Jim, yeah, let's come up. Jim, come up to the podium. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Come up to the microphone.
I'm sorry.
You're on record. From now on, that's the rule.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, actually, I think you can shave off about another 5 or 10 minutes and not bother anybody. And what I mean by that, the Byron School District already, with their laptops, or the sheriff's laptops, so if somebody broke into Timber Point right now in room 26, the sheriff's on their laptop already know that. So it goes right on there, they go to room 26. So they go right over there to room 26. You can do the same thing with this. Just hook it up right to the sheriff's department, and then poor Virgil wouldn't have to get out of bed at 2 o'clock in the morning.
The only thing you want to be aware of is
false alarms. Yeah, I mean, if the sheriff will agree to it, there are the law enforcement in many communities are starting to use cameras like this. You can see where it's a helpful tool. And it goes straight to their iPad device or their portable device in their car.
Yep.
And so the police departments and the government that are deploying this, you know, they get the alert and they can view the cameras right in their car and they can see what's going on.
They get there 10 minutes earlier than...
They might just be around the corner.
And you've got two resident deputies.
Yeah. You cut out 10 minutes
right
there.
Well, that's right. I mean, it would be just a conversation with the resident deputies to see how we want, like, they both get alerted.
We'd have to bring AJ in. You'd have to bring AJ in and talk to him about it and see if he'd be willing to adapt to it.
Or you can give it to the other guy if he comes in.
There are, like, I know when I was talking to the VDIQ people, there was a block of businesses, I think in Napa or something like that, where all the businesses just went in, video camera the whole thing, and took it straight to the police department. You know, so if someone's loitering in an alleyway, or someone's
part about this is the first time that it works really well is going to be the most effective time, because it's mostly going to be the same nefarious kids that are out there causing the problems, and the minute that they get caught by this thing or get scared by it, you're done.
Well, and then the word gets around to the
That's
rest
what I
of
mean.
Kids.
Yeah,
yeah, it's like, oh man.
Okay,
Billy just got busted.
We're not going to goof around at the community center anymore,
right,
or whatever. Hopefully, that would be the
right.
You know, no more furniture in the pool. You know.
Yeah. Eventually, we'll do the tree plants, and then we'll do Willow Lake too, because we had this place broken into as well. But anyway, so that's any more questions I'm going to ask.
Okay,
thank you, Jim. Something else.
There was something else.
Okay.
Oh, I guess I'm not the president.
Knowing the fact that there's been a lot of burglaries in the community center and vandalism and things of that nature, the Lions Club wanted to donate $500. Okay. To the Discovery Bay CSD, so they can work on the
present that to the president.
No, are you sure it's okay?
Yeah, it's okay. Oh, well, so there you go. Now you're getting no respect at all.
And I do want to make one more comment. Out of the two steals that are in the room, you're the good looking one.
Thank you, Gregory.
What do you need?
My lips are sealed.
That'd be a first. Okay. Item two.
I would make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation.
Second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Item two. Rick?
It's the Gregory Harris Show this evening. If you recall, at one of our, I think it was our September meeting, Furman Garcia from Violi had mentioned that there were some waste, the flows, the influent and the effluent flows were not calibrated correctly. And we've been spending a lot of time trying to resolve that issue and believe that that's been taken care of. While it may not be fixed yet, the resolution is on its way, and I just wanted to have Greg give a quick update to the board on that.
This is kind of an important issue because our recorded flow of the treatment plant is showing Discovery Bay shrinking. And so when new developers come in and say, do you have any wastewater treatment plant capacity left? If you're not recording your flows accurately, then suddenly you think you do when you don't, right? So the issue was our flows were going down and down and down, and we're like, what's going on? You know, people aren't leaving town that fast. And we went from an average flow of about 1.8 MGD, we were down to 1.3. So like 500,000 gallons is a lot of people. So we investigated and we found that the partial flumes where we measure the flow were not recording accurately. The instruments had not, even though we had Veolia had paid for calibration reports. The instruments themselves were, you know, they're basically 10, 12 years old and had essentially become uncalibrable, unable to calibrate them, you know. So they were just losing flow. And we've been reporting that, unfortunately, for quite a few months now as really low flow for Discovery Bay. We went out and I instructed on how to hand check the instruments, and I found that they were off by about 15 to 20%, and consequently we had Telstar come back out, and they, with me there next to them, I verified to them that the instruments were incorrect and not measuring properly. So based upon that, they essentially said there's nothing we can do to this instrument. It is what it is. We have to change instrument's type to get a better measurement. And so that's been the recommendation going forth, and we're getting quotes to change out the instruments at the three partial flumes so that our flow measurement will be accurate.
Mm-hmm. Gregory, how come this was never brought to the board that these were not able to be calibrated?
I think it was. There was a Furman mentioned it like 3 months ago. He came up here and mentioned that the flows were low about 3 months ago.
We've had this discussion a couple times.
But he never told us that you couldn't calibrate the instruments we're using.
Oh, we found that out this month.
Doesn't somebody over a period of time check them from time to time to see if
they're... Well, we do, but all right, so this is where we got into a little fight with our calibration company, all right? So every year they're required by state law to hire an independent qualified person to go out and calibrate them, right? So I went out, and what happened is Telstar, who used to calibrate our instruments, was having issues with Veolia, so they went to a new firm called Cooper Controls, and they didn't know what they were doing. And they just were screwing it up. So we were paying them, and they were giving us a certificate that they were calibrated, and they were wrong. And so we brought Telstar back out. They did the same thing. They said it's calibrated, it's fine. And I was very upset about that, and I called them up and said, you're gonna meet me in the field, and you're gonna show me. And they all agreed I was right at the end. So the issue was is we were paying people to calibrate them, and they were just screwing it up. They
didn't know how to do it. It's the methodology?
What's that?
This is the methodology, why?
Yeah. Okay. My opinion.
Hold on a second.
So anyway, we finished. We went through that in October, and had Telstar out with me there, Furman. You know, basically we got five or six people up there at the same time and said, okay, let's really do it now with everyone standing here. And it became apparent that it was off. The instrument was off. And it can't be fixed.
And the flows that he's talking about is your daily flows go up and down. Some days are really high. They're over 2 million gallons a day. Some are 1.3. So what we're trying to do is gauge the monthly average, 30-day average. And a few months ago, we started to see it go down, and it could go down. It's possible. But it kept going down and down, and that's when we raised the red flag, thinking we got something wrong here. I could see 1 month down, the next month up, but not a few months down. So it takes a few months before you really notice it going down and something's astray. Even if they're calibrated in February, generally every February of every year, they get calibrated.
They were doing it wrong.
What effect does this have on, we won't know until it's recalibrated correctly exactly what the effect is, I guess, huh?
Well, I was able to see how far the instrument was off when I measured it by hand, and it was off 15 to 20%. So that automatically puts us back into the 1.5, 1.6, which is, given the recession and the other things going on, a reasonable number. So we're expecting
so we don't expect it to exceed our permit.
Yeah, no, it just basically gets us back to where we thought we were.
At least we're being accurate.
Yeah, all exactly. Right.
Chris?
No, I'm good, thanks.
All right. Bill? What, just for future knowledge, when to assume Pantages and the other project come on stream, I know we talked about this roughly, where are we at that point with our flows?
We have...
Capacity-wise.
No capacity to take
Pantages. Okay,
we have no capacity to take Pantages. All our remaining capacity plan is contracted to Hoffman. So the master plan that we put through and the bond we floated to build all this other stuff, we will physically have, when that's completed, we will physically have the equipment and tanks and things in place to accept Pantages and everybody else in your planning area that was in the master plan. Permit-wise, you're not allowed to go beyond that until you file a new report of waste discharge and a new EIR and things like that. So where we are right now is we've been fixing other headworks and other little things. We're designing the big redundant project, this oxidation ditch clarifier. When that is through construction, you'll have the physical hardware in place. Someone's still gotta change our permit, and that's, you know, one of the developers, so Vantageous or whoever, is gonna have to pay to modify our permit so that we can accept more flow at that time. But right now, all remaining flow is contracted to Hopper.
It was that dual purpose of the infrastructure construction to not only provide redundancy and reliability for the system, but to also, the master plan said, to build out what need to be built out, but the costs for that are not going to occur. Only the redundancy is in play until there's more.
Right. Only the redundancy in play. That's a good point, right? Because if you recall, I think last month or 2 months ago, we talked about getting some things designed and ready for growth, but they wouldn't be built until development says, okay, we're growing and we want to build this, you know, kind of thing. So there's a few projects like that. The biggest one's the oxidation ditch. It comes in for redundancy, but there's a few other little things that have to get built. And those were discussed last time. We're going to get them designed, have them ready, but they won't get built until someone says they're ready to build and they're going to pony up.
Somebody pays for it.
Yeah, they're going to pay for it.
Okay. Any other questions? Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Director's comments. Marianne, anything?
Nothing, thank you.
Bill?
Nothing to report today.
Chris?
Yeah, on October 24th, I attended the Byron Union School District trustee meeting. Just a couple of comments. They had a video production class put together a presentation for the trustees, and it's over at Excelsior Middle School. But as I was watching these 8 or 10 students work on that, it looked like it might be an opportunity to engage those students into putting together public service video ads for our website. Or something in the future, but they have the kids of the technology. They're learning how to script and compose a storyboard on how to present a 30-second commercial. But it was interesting, and Liberty High School ties into that too. They've got a senior students and equipment that help advise those classes. But it seemed like a great program. Second thing was they're having the same conversation about security and how to improve cameras technology. And as Jim Madison pointed out, you know, they've got some great abilities to. You know, alarm, you know, respond quickly. So, thank you.
I attended the ECCFPD meeting, but Hugh Anderson gave my report and I turned in my written report. So,
okay. General Manager's report.
Carol, can you pass those out for me, please? This is the final draft of the newsletter that we talked about at the Community Center joint meeting a couple of weeks ago. A lot of time and effort has gone into this. It is in a, it actually went to the printer today, so it should be in the mailbox sometime in early December. We'll get a final proof here probably in the next 10 days or so. So if you remember, it's the flip book theory, and just wanted to give you a chance to take a look at it. You just see, so you know what we've done in every, all the programs and all the classes are already listed on the website. You can go on there, you can register for them right now if you want to. So other than that, that's all I have to see.
Nice piece.
Yeah, I would echo those comments. I would commend staff on the excellent work on that.
Very nice. Well thought out, and I am excited about getting things rolling again on this flip side.
Nicely done.
I'm sorry, one last thing. Virgil, I wasn't aware of it, but go ahead. You had an item on the sewer.
On the sewer, he wasn't aware. It's a repair item, actually. Pretty expensive to repair. We have one of our rotors, the rotors and the oxidation discs, there are four of them. The shaft on it's literally broken in half. And so we believe it's through stress on the metal part of it. Anyway, it'd be anywhere between $20,000 to $35,000 to replace that, to fix that. So you see a bill 30, 45 days from now, don't be, shocked.
Is that coming out of reserve money?
No, that won't be, repair reserves.
It'll come out of a regular repair maintenance account that we have. We have an allocated dollar amount for things like that. But on that same line, we did discuss this at a meeting we had with Julie and the staff last week regarding some of the billings and some of the things like that. And we're going to go ahead and bring this to the board. work for authorization. It's going to be a post authorization though, so we're going to give you a report. We will have already purchased it. It's more of a it's an emergency situation. If we were to lose another one, we'd be in really bad shape. So we're getting it out. We're getting it ordered.
Okay. Thank you. District legal.
Sir.
Thank you very much. Committee updates. Community center status report. No report.
You guys ran it.
We ran it. Correspondence. Future agenda items.
I have one.
Bill?
I'd like to put on the community center the current landscaping items that are out there now so we could talk about that. And the reason for it, I know we can't speak about it now, but I want to be able to allow the community to see into the area that we have and be able to see the pool and see that. So I have a thought process I'd like to discuss at a meeting about removing some landscaping.
Mary Ann, anything?
I have nothing, thank you.
Chris?
Nope.
Kevin?
Nope.
In that case, thank you for coming. We're adjourned.